This is The Bottom Line. I'm Doug Wells, and today we're speaking with Gavin Christensen, founder and managing partner of Kickstart Seed Fund. 20 years ago, during the dot-com boom, entrepreneurs in the Bay Area were turning away investors while companies here in Utah were literally starving for capital. That's all changed now, thanks in large parts to the efforts of Gavin, his partners at Vspring Capital, and a group of universities and outside limited partners, also known as investors, who saw the opportunity to build a healthy, cohesive, and thriving entrepreneurial ecosystem. Kickstart's first fund, which they raised in 2008, was only $8 million. But their second fund grew to $26 million, and their most recent fund just closed and is nearly $40 million. Kickstart's success and their support of other investor groups has reinvigorated the angel community here in Utah, as well as spawned a few other seed fund competitors. Gavin, thank you for joining us on The Bottom Line.
Great to be here.
So most listeners have probably heard about venture capital. They've probably read in the Wall Street Journal or in the Salt Lake Trib, the Deseret News, some firms that have put hundreds of millions of dollars into firms like Facebook or Alibaba before they go public. But that stage of venture capital is very different than what you do.
Right.
So explain to our audience, what is seed fund investing?
So seed stage investing, and really it's evolved, frankly. I've been in the industry for, 10, 12 years now, and it's evolved even since I've been involved. I like to think of it as venture capital as it was in its purest form. It's generally the first check that's written by an institution into a company. It's the only people that typically precede us would be like friends, family, fools, the three Fs, or potentially an angel investor. And often when we started Kickstart, a lot of what we were focused on is that there was a lot of great angel investors in Utah, a fair amount of capital for the size of state we had, but there wasn't a lot of leadership. And so we combined a small fund with sort of institutional leadership at that earliest stage. And so that's really what we brought to it. But it's that earliest money. Sometimes, these days companies actually have revenue when we invest, but often they don't. And there's generally some semblance of a team, but it's far from complete.
And I would suspect for the average listener hearing that, how early you'll invest prior to the company even having revenue, that probably sounds really risky to them. So how do you think about the risk of a portfolio of seed investments?
Yeah. So there's now a little bit of academic data on this, which is kind of interesting. And the key things as a seed investor you want to look out for, one is you can't just do one deal, right? You have to have a portfolio of investments, generally more than 15. You need to due diligence really matters a lot, even at this stage. Even though it's hard to know what are you going to do diligence, well, it's often the people. It's the opportunity you're focused on. Many times the opportunity you invest in is different than the opportunity that has success, and so really that comes back to the people. And you're going to want to actually be active with the investments as the investor. So really Kickstart, we've really designed our whole fund around those concepts of, hey, we're going to do a portfolio of companies. We're going to be very active in helping those companies. And we're going to do our work. We're going to make sure that, we choose the best opportunities. Really, it's the exception that gets seed stage funding. It's, I think nationally it's less than 1% of companies that apply for this kind of funding actually get it. And so really that's our job is doing a lot of work up front to decide, what to bet on. And once we bet, really trying to be a great partner for that journey, for the slog that it often is.
Right. And so what kind of success rate are you seeing? Your first fund was raised, I think, 2008,
2009. Yeah.
Nationwide, 80% of all new businesses fail. With your mentorship, your help, some capital as well.
Yeah.
What kind of success rate are you hoping to achieve with your portfolio?
When we started Kickstart, the thought was, gosh, if we can get 50% success, that's over the moon for us. So far, knock on this wood here on the desk, we're seeing well north of that. We've only written off a few hundred K of that original $8 million. We've put a lot of money to work since. We expect to see some pretty spectacular failures in our portfolio, but we also have an ethic that I think has bought us a lot of loyalty from our investors and from our entrepreneurs of fixing things, of trying to avoid zeros where we can. And I think it's a big difference between, you know, in your opening you talked about the Bay Area investing versus Utah investing. You know, for us, you know, it's important that we not have zeros. And you know, we don't in the Bay Area, I think it's okay to let others, you know, you kind of let the village raise your young, you know, because there's so many great entrepreneurs and VCs out there just kind of helping companies. In Utah, we have that, but we don't have quite their critical mass. And so it's important for us to be very active with our investments.
So. Great. You know, so you're backing startups, but in many ways, Kickstart itself was a startup.
Right.
I mentioned BeSpring.
Yeah.
I found out about Kickstart through Paul Ahlstrom, who was a general partner at Kickstart, at BeSpring at the time. And I should mention my firm's an investor, a limited partner in all three of your funds. But as a startup, you know, there's always these positive surprises and there's always these negative surprises. As you look at your journey since 2008, what would have been some of the most, the best positive surprises, as well as maybe a few of the negative surprises along the way?
So it's a really good question. Yeah, and that's how I see Kickstart. And I think it's one reason that we've been able to relate to entrepreneurs so well is that, you know, Kickstart is very much, in the early days, we called Kickstart a startup that funds other startups. Like, that's our business. And, you know, starting with the positive surprises, you know, I was able to step in a situation where there was a confluence of factors coming together with VSpring, universities, and, you know, the community came saying, hey, we need this seed stage fund. Not a lot of folks wanting to raise their hands to actually do it. And, you know, some failed efforts. And I kind of stepped into that and said, hey, I'll do it. I'll put it together. And I would say, you know, like a lot of the folks have been on your show, at some level, you kind of step into that gap and put it together. And in my case, raise the money and kind of go, wow, you keep doing it until someone says you shouldn't be doing this or you're not qualified or, you know, and there's folks that sort of did that in different ways, but in some ways it's amazing how you just keep doing it and pretty soon it's like people are like, hey, good job raising that fund. You're like, I guess I did it, you know.
Right.
So I think just the act of putting it all together and it working is a little bit of on the other hand, I never thought I couldn't do it. I never thought it wouldn't happen, but I look back and go, oh, that was actually pretty crazy. For a guy that was pretty young to put that together with not really a track record of doing this.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Gavin Christensen, founder and managing partner of Kickstart Seed Fund. You know, you'll have young people that'll come talk to you for advice. I occasionally get folks come to talk to me for advice. They might want to get in your business, be a venture capitalist, or be an entrepreneur. In my case, they want to get into the investing world. You know, and one of the things I tell young people is you kind of have to make your opportunity.
Yeah,
if you want to get into a field that's hard, the opportunity that's going to be open to you today is not to be a GP at a $100 million fund, right? Yeah, and that's one of the things that's impressed me the most about Kickstart is you guys, just like a startup, you guys willed Kickstart into a successful fund. You know, I would say as an investor and watching from the outside and a little bit from the inside, one of the best positive surprises to me of Kickstart's success is really the whole idea of the investment committee. Which is very different than a typical investment committee. You typically have the general partners of the fund making the decisions. Sometimes it's unanimous, sometimes it's not. Sometimes the voting's open, sometimes it's not. And there's a whole lot involved in that. But just the structure of your investment committee is very different than any other fund I know. Talk to the audience. How does your investment committee work? And I should probably share for several years I was on that investment committee as well.
Absolutely. So, yeah, you have unique insight on this. Yeah, I would say that's another positive surprise for me, and I think most businesses have a core insight, you know, that work, and really a lot of the energy from the idea comes from that kind of core insight. And I think with Kickstart, the core insight that we tapped into was that the passion people had for this community and making it work, and we tapped into that, and the investment committee was part of that, where we brought, so basically the investment committee is made up of significant limited partners or investors in the fund who we also felt could be very valuable in helping us make good decisions. And that the need for that came from my experience of having worked for another fund where I felt like the decision process became part of the problem, you know, in terms of, you know, it was hard for investment committees to separate their own interest in seeing a company succeed for and the fund's overall interest in making good decisions. And so having it be arm's length, we felt like would make for better returns for the fund. And you know, I think the committee, when we first started it, it was a mutual experiment, kind of like, hey, we'll try this out. You know, we're not sure if this is a good use of our time. And I think pretty quickly it became, for us, a super valuable experience of having very smart people in the room helping us make decisions who actually were writing checks, you know, their own checks into the deals. And I think the committee members, pretty quickly it became one of the most their favorite things they did, the way they spent time. And it was a very leveraged way for them to spend time with great entrepreneurs. And it sort of is this virtuous cycle, I think, with the committee to where now, we have an incredible group. It's made it easier to raise funds because the folks around the table, when we go to raise a new fund, they know exactly what's going on because they've been part of it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of that we got them to be part of a venture fund without having to, I always say, without having to see the sausage being made, right? So it's kind of like, hey, we get to see the companies, see them pitch. We get to see all the due diligence when it's done.
They get to participate in the fun part.
Yeah.
And also one of the most valuable parts. You know, in any industry, for any company, for any leader, the quality of your decisions oftentimes is going to determine whether you're successful or
not. That's
right.
That is our output, right? You know, we invest, you know, really hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in expense to have, and the output on the other end is not products, it's great decisions, right? And so that's really where the committee has really helped us.
Well, let's take a quick break, and then we'll talk some more with Gavin Christensen, founder and managing partner of Kickstart Seed Fund. Welcome back to The Bottom Line at KCPW. I'm Doug Wells. Today we're speaking with Gavin Christensen, managing partner of Kickstart Seed Fund, a venture capital firm that manages just over $70 million. You know, I think the idea of being a venture capitalist appeals to a lot of people, particularly past entrepreneurs, business owners, angel investors.
Yeah.
What's the job really like? We talked just a minute ago about doing the fun stuff.
Yeah.
And you talked about protecting your investment committee from making the sausage.
Yeah.
What's the process of making the sausage?
So this goes back to your earlier question too of like, what are the negative surprises? So I think what people don't realize is just how much, you know, I often talk to like successful entrepreneurs who are like, yeah, you know, maybe I want to get into your business of, you know, writing checks and being an investor. And I think, especially at the seed stage, people don't realize what a grind it is, right? It's a ton of work. My business, you know, the scarce resource no longer is capital. It's time, my time, the time of my team. And it's really time spent with entrepreneurs, helping them build their businesses, you know, being everything from a speech coach to a psychologist to a, you know, biz dev help, doing all those things for the entrepreneur and really being their key partner. One thing we were talking about earlier is, when it works and a company, you know, is executing and, you know, you get an exit and, you know, kind of you're able to send, you know, money back to your limited partners, it's great, but it's kind of a relief. You kind of say, that's what's supposed to happen, you know. And when it's not working and it's super painful, and Doug, you and I have worked closely on some of those that actually...
A couple of those that we thought we might end up writing off that ended up being nice successes.
But it's kind of like the pain of that process sometimes is actually a deeper trough than when it works. And it could be just my psychology where maybe I don't celebrate successes as much as I do, but I know other folks in this program have similar things. It's kind of like that journey is can be very difficult, and part of I think what makes a good venture capitalist is being able to be you keep yourself very moderated, you know, not get too low, not get too high, and I think that's what makes you a good close counselor to entrepreneurs is having that same mental discipline.
Another thing that I you mentioned what makes a good venture capitalist. In knowing when to follow your winners.
Yep.
And more importantly, maybe when to say no to companies that aren't going to make it. And it's a tough decision because oftentimes you put a little more money, you can salvage the company. Yep. You and I have both been in situations with firms like that.
Yep.
So how do you think about that? How do you decide when, you know, all companies are going to have their ups and downs, companies going through a trough.
Yeah.
How do you make that decision as to, boy, if you put in a little more money, maybe you can salvage this?
Yeah, I agree. I think those are the hardest decisions you make as a venture capitalist. And specifically, the hardest decision is to not follow a company. And I would say the way we do it, so we do the most important thing we've done is have an outside investment committee that, you know, there's the idea in venture capital of escalation of commitment, you know, is a very real thing, right? The more money you put into a company, the more likely you are to keep following it. And so for us, we have an outside committee that's always saying, they're not as close to it. They don't have as much emotional attachment to the investment. So they're always saying, is this really the best use of our capital? So I think the first thing you do is structural, which is say, okay, we got to put barriers between ourselves and that escalation of commitment, you know, fallacy. We have to structure reserves, which is the money after we write the first check. We have to come back and talk about why this company deserves reserves or not. And for Kickstarter, what we did is we structured an initial investment, a follow-on investment that is – it's a high bar, but it's a lower bar than any money that follows. And then any money that follows is actually competitive amongst the companies. And it was something we did after the first fund. And I think we actually did a good job with reserve in the first fund. But again, in my history in venture capital, reserves, if you don't watch this, you end up putting 80% of your capital into your worst companies.
Right.
Because they always need money. And they're always, you know, and they're being run by entrepreneurs who believe and feel like, hey, we're just around the corner. You know, the rainbows, like we can see the pot of gold, it's right there. And one of the things they say in the industry is it takes, you know, 20, 30, 50 million to train a venture capitalist. And one of the benefits for me coming into Kickstarter is I had the benefit of, you know, investing lots of money with the Vspring guys and learning both on the positive and negative side this issue of reserves.
I think that's important advice for any industry, whether you're investing or running a manufacturing company,
sure,
a service business, which is thinking about what the issues up front can be. You,
yep,
identified that before you even started the first Kickstarter,
yeah,
fund and said, structurally, what do I do to keep myself from being drawn into the,
yeah,
you know, everybody thinks, oh, it's not going to happen.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah,
not,
yeah,
gonna, but it does.
Yeah.
So what can you do structurally day one?
Yeah.
What about the flip side of it? You know, not only are you investing in entrepreneurs, but oftentimes you're co-investing,
yeah,
with angel investors, other institutional investors as,
yeah,
well. One of my observations out in the Bay Area is the elbows can get pretty sharp pretty quickly,
yeah,
both when you have a winner and when you have a loser.
Yep.
And one of the things that I've noticed here in Utah, and I think Kickstart gets a lot of the accolades for this, we tend to work better as a team of investors. Was that a goal that you had day one?
Yeah.
And what gave you the insight that was going to be an issue ahead of time and allowed you to set up things to do it that way?
No, I appreciate that, Doug. Yeah, there are some kind of guiding principles that I had in mind. And it's one of the benefits of, you know, we love to see entrepreneurs that start a company in the same industry they've been in because of, you just have these unique insights. And I was lucky to be an entrepreneur that started a firm in the exact industry that I was in. And so, the insights around reserves, around, you know, the kind of firm I wanted to build were pretty clear to me. You know, I wanted to build a collaborative firm. When we started Kickstart, you know, when we said, hey, we're the source for seed capital in Utah, no one disputed it because no one really cared about that. That wasn't like bragging rights, right? It was like, oh yeah, have fun with that. You know, let us know if something works out. And so early on, the importance of collaboration was we were really selling. We were trying to build the category. We were trying to entice other investors, angel investors, institutions to invest in Utah seed stage companies. And so we had to do the work for them. And
that seems natural to you to talk about collaboration.
Yeah.
But my firm invests in dozens of,
yep,
of venture funds. And it's not something you hear most venture capitalists talk about.
Yeah.
Do you think it has more to do with Utah, that maybe the stage of investing that you're doing very early stage,
yeah,
or just who the people were that started the firm?
I think it's all of them. It's definitely stage dependent as well. So early on in Kickstart, you know, we were trying to do rounds of, like, say, 750K, and our check size, based on the other things we talked about already of saying, hey, we don't want to be too concentrated in any one investment, we only could write a check of, say, 250K. So we needed to entice others. So there was a business imperative. Now the dynamic has changed where there's when Kickstart does a deal or is looking at it, there's no lack of capital around that investment. And so now we're applying the same idea and saying, hey, you know, I have enough experience in the industry and I've been through cycles where I know that more often than not, when you write a check and you have other folks alongside who are motivated, you're really happy they're in, because the next check can be really hard. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, I've just done enough deals that, you know, I know that the first check is not the last, and that there's going to be hard times. And so getting people that have enough of an investment in a company to where they're going to follow and help, that's a real benefit. And that's the seed stage. And I think that's true everywhere. But you're definitely seeing a dynamic in venture capital where, you know, the greed glasses are on a little more than they have been. And, you know, they're crowding out around rounds. And there's sort of this assumption that, hey, this is your chance to get your ownership. The reality is we're writing checks now in this great economy, you know, especially in Utah. But we're exiting 8 years from now. This is a journey. It's going to be a slog. You know, what I tell entrepreneurs and other syndicate partners is, look, venture capital is a multi-round game. Play a long-term game. There's going to be times that if you don't, you're going to regret it along the way. So
yeah, and I've seen that from you guys, and it's something I appreciate as my firm co-investing alongside of you. You know, most of my work's in the public markets, and I think it's a common critique, and rightfully so, that publicly held companies are too short-sighted.
Yeah.
You know, one of the nice things about a startup is these entrepreneurs can say, you know what, maybe this industry is not where it needs to be today, but I'm going to go in, I'm going to learn the space, I'm going to become an expert at it. So as it grows, as it explodes, then we'll be the player there.
Yeah.
And I think you're smart to look at Kickstart as well and say, what's the long-term game for Kickstart, and let's play for that.
Yeah.
So we've talked about entrepreneurs, we've talked about investors. And one of the roles you play as one of the lead investors often in these deals is you're the one that proposes the first set of deal terms.
Yep.
And you've got to balance it so that it's fair for the entrepreneur and it's also fair for investors.
Yeah.
And how do you think about that?
It's a good question. The guiding philosophy would be, hey, multi-round game, but we're also balancing, you know, our limited partners expect us to get the best deal possible within reason. Often early in Kickstart, and I would say it's still not uncommon that we're investing in folks who have not raised money before, maybe very sophisticated. And so we feel like our role is often, you know, we have to wear multiple hats. One, you know, I actually teach, you know, multiple university classes. I put on sort of Professor Christensen hat of like, hey, let me teach you what you should know in a deal term negotiation.
So you can use it against me
later. Honestly, yeah.
Because I
feel like this is this whole like multi-round negotiation. It's like you're going to get smart at some point, and I don't want you to feel like, hey, you took advantage of the knowledge that you have because you've done, you know, 100 of these deals. And so, you know, I had this conversation with an entrepreneur, you know, yesterday who was very sophisticated, hadn't raised capital before, and I said, look, before we talk terms, let me just tell you, you know, what are the key terms? You know, there's control terms, there's economic terms. And why they're important, because a lot of the disconnect that happens in these negotiations is really explaining why things are the way they are. You know, there's been a lot of thought that's gone into the crystallizing of the venture capital model the way it is. And, you know, in economy, you know, the economy rises and falls, but those stay pretty close. So a lot of it's just explaining. And that usually helps make the negotiation go very quickly. We know we negotiate, but typically it's something that goes pretty quickly, and a lot of it comes down to, hey, do you want to work with us? Do we want to work with you? We got 8 years ahead of us. We're going to have many of these negotiations. Any party feels like they got taken advantage of, or it was a hard negotiation, it'll come back the next time around, right?
Yep. So, I think one of the things that's hard for folks that haven't been in this space is the thought, you know, they come up with an idea for a company, they get it starting to go, they get some initial traction, maybe they've got a co-founder. And now when it comes time for funding, investors want them, and they at this point, they own 100% of the company.
Yeah, yeah.
And they want to raise money, so maybe they're thinking of selling 20% of the company to raise X dollars.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that surprises a lot of entrepreneurs, and I want to talk about it on air just to kind of lay the groundwork for folks that are thinking about this, is even though they own 100% of the company day one, when they bring in investors, they're going to have to vest their ownership of the company over 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Why is that important both to the company, to the founders, and also to investors?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's one of the conversations that I make sure that we have up front and say, hey, have you heard of founder vesting or share repurchase? If you haven't, let's explain why it's the case. And again, what you'll find, you know, we've done recently a number of deals with what, you know, people would consider tier one investors, folks who are the thought leaders in venture capital. And one of the things that was actually a little surprising to me, and these guys are investing, once a company is going to be successful, then the question is, how successful will they be? And those guys don't really compromise on this issue. In fact, often they restart the entrepreneurs on a four-year vest at that point. So they're actually more onerous than we are on that topic.
And it's getting pretty frothy out in the Bay Area.
It is.
So other
yeah.
terms, pricing's yeah, getting
pricing
more relaxed.
Is, yeah.
Other terms are getting more relaxed.
Yeah.
But this is such an important point mm-hmm. that this may have gotten even
yeah.
a little tighter.
That's right. And so, you know, the way to think about it, so from the company's perspective, often you have more than one founder. You know, two co-founders is very, very typical from what we see. And so a lot of it is them looking at each other and saying, hey, are you all in? You know, am I all in? And let's agree to this so that in case something happens, like something often does, that, you know, I have to go do this for whatever reason, something else, that we're not rewarded the same, you know, based on our effort. So it's a way of having, you know, both folks get yoked to the plow equally. For the investor, it's super important that the folks that create the outcome get rewarded. And so our goal in structuring those agreements is to say, hey, we're seed investors. Our goal is to be as founder-friendly as we possibly can, but we also know we've done enough of these deals. We know that something can often happen, generally not created by the founder's, you know, own circumstances where it doesn't make sense.
Well, in the yeah. example we're talking about, right, they sell 20% of the company. Yeah. There's two co-founders, so the investors own 20%. Each co-founder has 40%. If you don't vest, you know, 6 months later, one of the co-founders says, you know, actually, this isn't what I thought. I'm
yeah.
going to leave. Well, they just left with 40% of the equity yeah. of your company, and how do you get that back?
Yeah, and then the individual that's you know, working every day, grinding it out for the next 10 years, starts to feel pretty bad.
Yeah.
So it's something you want to structure up front. It's a mistake that a lot of entrepreneurs can make early, is not build that in, and so we try to put that in place.
That concludes the first part of our conversation with Gavin Christensen, founder of Kickstart Seed Fund, a Utah-based venture capital firm with over $70 million under management. Join us next week to hear the rest of the conversation. Today's show was recorded at the KCPW studios on Library Square and produced by Ross Chambliss. You can also hear our show on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at KCPW Bottom Line. I'm Doug Wells. Join us next week on The Bottom Line.